Welcome and thank you very much for joining us on episode 50 of the Blazers Edge podcast, presented to you by BlazersEdge.com. I'm your weekend host, Chris Lucia. If you'd like to get a hold of us at the show, you can do so anytime at BlazersEdgePodcast@gmail.com. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher. I promised the Blazers Edge podcast listeners that I'd bring someone special on for the 50th episode. I had a lot of suggestions to get Bill Simmons on the show. unfortunately, he wasn't available on a Friday night to break down the Blazers draft and all the trades that went down, but I got the next best guy, Blazers Edge contributor Willie Reddy. Willie, what's good, man?
Well, that's good. Next best guy, I don't know. It was Zach Lowe tied up too?
I got a hold of Bill Simmons. I texted him. He didn't get back to me this time. It was kind of weird. Zach Lowe would have been next, but, you know, Willie Reddy, you've been on the show, what, three times by now? Episode 50, why not have a guy who's been on more than anybody? I think that's a special occasion, right?
Well, I'm happy to be here.
So my question to you is, what the heck is going on with the Blazers here?
That's what everybody's asking.
On Tuesday, you and I talked about bringing you on the podcast, and we were going to track it Friday night. And this was because the NBA draft was on Thursday night, so we would have something to kind of talk about on Friday, and that was kind of the plan, was to just, you know, I assumed we'd be breaking down, you know, RJ Hunter or Justin Anderson or something along those lines, and how that guy at pick number 23 would kind of fit in with the Blazers rotation.
Right.
And then everything kind of started to, the first stone kind of went down the hill, and it just kind of kept going and going. Totally. and gained steam from there. So let's kind of just, we'll go through it, this timeline of events that happened in the past, you know, 48 to 72 hours, starting with the Nicholas Batum trade. And then we'll kind of break those down in a vacuum a little bit. So it started out Wednesday afternoon. It was announced that Nicholas Batum was being traded to the Charlotte Hornets for Noah Vonleh and then Gerald Henderson. So we got that happened Wednesday. That kind of threw a wrench in the plan for the podcast, but I figured we could break that down. We could also break down the draft.
Sure.
That's cool. They would happen in subsequent nights. And then the next day, leading up to the draft, or actually overnight after the Batum trade, I believe it was Mark Stein of ESPN kind of published this piece that was basically saying, a source with knowledge of the situation or an anonymous league executive, I believe, you know, had some inside information saying that LaMarcus Aldridge was 99.9% sure that he was going to leave the Blazers. And not only that, but that he had also informed the Blazers. And then overnight, they corroborated that story and updated it a little bit with a few more sources and whatnot. And I believe it was either the next day or the next afternoon, Eric Gunderson of the Vancouver Columbian, who's been a guest on the show before, shout out to Eric, published a piece that was kind of saying that he had talked to a league executive as well, and kind of confirmed a little bit what that Stein ESPN story was saying about LaMarcus, you know, being sure that he was going to leave the team, and also that he had already informed the team that he was going to leave. So this was all leading up to the draft. And then you have the draft itself. Do you want to take it from there?
Sure. And I don't remember exactly who said what with all that mess, but that was the take-home message. And then draft night, Rondae Hollis Jefferson slips all the way down the draft board. I'm super pumped. Everybody's super pumped. Blazers draft him at 23, and then they flip him pretty much immediately for Mason, right? Mason Plumlee.
Right,
Mason and Pat Connaughton from Notre Dame.
Right, second round pick, Pat Connaughton.
Yep.
Okay, and then to just kind of, as a little nightcap for the night, they acquired the rights from the Utah Jazz, a second round pick, Daniel Diaz. That would be international Spanish player, 6'8" forward, who mm-hmm. may or may not come over to the Blazers. At any rate, they did acquire those rights, and that kind of tied up the night for the Blazers.
For sure.
So we have a lot to break down here. I guess we should probably start with what started this entire sequence of events.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of surprised. It didn't surprise me any at all that Nicholas Batum was being shopped by Neil O'Shea.
Right.
What surprised me was what got Neil O'Shea to pull the trigger on shipping Batum out. And he confirmed this in a press release last night and a press conference, you know, saying that he was shopping Nicholas Batum for a few weeks, I believe.
For a mid lottery pick.
Yeah. And they were looking to get up into the lottery, and that just never really materialized. So Wednesday afternoon, I guess the best deal they could get was Nick Batum straight across for Gerald Henderson and Noah Vonleh. That's the gist of it, right?
Yeah.
So my question is, in all of this, what is this signifying? You're basically getting rid of your second longest tenured Blazer behind LaMarcus Aldridge. Nick Batum is kind of, would you call him polarizing for fans?
Yeah.
I think if you love him, you love him, right?
And understatement.
If you don't like him, you don't like him. At least at Blazers Edge, there seems to be, it's either one or the other. You think he's great or you think he's not living up to his potential enough. And I think that kind of sums up his career with the Blazers a little bit. I think, you know, I kind of read some comments about Nick Batum, and it was kind of like, you know, hey, he would have these insane rebounding nights, or this insane night where he had 13 assists, or the 5x5 game. And they would interview him after the game and say, what's going on, man? Where'd this all come from? And he said, well, coach talked to me and said, I need to contribute more on the boards. Was this your article? Maybe that might've been in the comment section.
No, it wasn't mine.
At any rate, this was an opinion that I did read on the site. And you know, it's kind of like, you know, he needed that external force kind of to light that fire under him a bit. You know, the coach says, you got to crash the boards. He comes out and grabs 18 rebounds. Coach says, you got to be the hub of the offense. So he's going to come out and get double digit assists on down the line. But game to game, he wasn't exactly doing that. So I can understand what the willingness for not only Blazer fans to the comfort level of Blazer fans having him on the trading block and him being the most logical player on the team, considering the size of his contract, that he's going to be expiring.
Right.
And that other teams could probably see a lot of value in his varied skill set.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a lot of people were comfortable, you know, shopping him. I can see why Neil O'Shea would kind of be, you know, that would be probably the piece that he would be looking to maximize the most out of. Do you think Gerald Henderson and Noah Vonleh, in all honesty, is the best return that you could get for a guy like Nick Batum, considering his contract?
Man, I mean, that's such a hard question to answer. We just have no knowledge of what people thought. I mean, it is difficult. Him being expiring is almost hurts his value in a sense, because if a team does like his game, thinks he's going to bounce back, so kind of believes his value isn't reflected by his slumping year last year, then the fact that he might leave after a season, you know, hurts. So his value is lower if you think he's good, and then if you think he's bad, well, obviously his value, if you don't think it was a fluke season, if the other team that you're trying to trade with doesn't think it's a fluke season, then his value is also low. So it was kind of just the worst time to trade him, really. And I had, you know, me and Evans went back and forth, you know, talking about the trade, and I think pretty clearly, you know, definitely sold low on the tomb. Although I don't know all that much about Vonleh, but some people seem to really like him. So maybe that's a little bit too harsh of a sentiment.
I'm kind of wondering with Nick Batum, maybe his agent, I'm wondering if Olshay's hand was pushed, because it seems like, or he was put in a position where he kind of had to maximize the value on Batum when he still could, because, right. You know, to me, it just seems like to pull the trigger on that trade, it's certainly not maximizing the potential value you could get from it. Almost feels like not quite a trade for a trade's sake.
Yeah.
But it just seems like you're kind of settling a little bit there.
And well, I don't know.
What other factors do you think could come into play there?
Well, I think the biggest thing is, and you asked, you know, what does this signify? I think Dave had a great article talking about all the questions that the trade raised, and, you know, there's all the different opinions, different reports on what Aldridge is doing. But I think the biggest thing to me that the Batum trade signified is Aldridge wasn't buying the let's just bring everybody back, we'll be healthy next year, and then we'll be good. We'll be a contender. I think the one thing that, you know, regardless of how you what you think about Vonleh or Henderson, is that Olshay exposed the team from a roster standpoint to a whole bunch of risk with the move, because, you know, you lost a starter. You basically have nobody you would feel comfortable starting at the small forward position. So even though, you know, there's lots of potential for future moves, that he got a young player, the risk associated with that trade so many days before the draft and before free agency, before Olshay has any idea what anybody's going to do, you know, assuming he's not tampering and like talking to other players, right, outside of his, you know, Aldridge and Matthews and whatnot. So to me, when I saw that trade, it was like, okay, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that Aldridge is leaving, but it means that the, if they wanted to keep Aldridge, just saying we're going to bring everybody back, that wasn't going to get it done. And then, you know, as we've kind of documented on the site, you know, with the help of readers, with just everybody kind of chipping in, the only way the team was going to get any sort of roster flexibility was going to be to trade Batum, just because of how the salaries and the cap holds,
right,
you know, broke down. So to me, definitely signified that bringing everybody back was not going to keep Aldridge here. And once, if that's true, then, you know, Olshay had to shake up the roster, and Batum was the only guy to really do that.
Yeah, it sounds about right. And it, you know, it does leave that hole that we mentioned. There's still, I mean, free agency hasn't even opened for the summer. We still have, you know, 3 or 4 days until July 1st, right? So there's going to be a lot more chips to fall on the table.
For sure.
We don't know what's going to happen for that starting small forward spot. You know, and I also don't want to undersell Gerald Henderson and Noah Vonleh. I mean, they're great pieces. And I think, as Olshay said in the presser, you know, Henderson is an athletic guy. He's a good part of a rotation. The one thing that I bring kind of into question with Gerald Henderson, and I had him on my fantasy team last season, so I'm intimately aware of this, is that he's a 31% 3-point shooter.
Yeah.
And that to me, I'm wondering if the Blazers are going to bring in kind of a, you know, athletic wing who can play a little bit of defense. Isn't that ability to hit the 3-point shot at least a 36% clip, isn't that kind of necessary to play that role in the Blazers offense? Or are we going to see him playing 15 to 20 minutes a night or off the bench? What, you know, how do you expect Gerald Henderson to kind of fit in with what Terry Stotts is doing on the floor?
Well, I'm not even sure he'll be here. So
great,
I haven't really thought about that much. I think you're absolutely right. If you look at the numbers, you look at the advanced stats, basically Gerald Henderson's best season was about as good as Nicholas Batum's last season.
Right, his worst.
Yeah, so it's definitely, at least in terms of rotation players, a pretty big downgrade in that respect. I mean, the thing that's interesting is, you know, maybe with his salary being a lot lower, he's also in a contract year. Maybe he's a more movable asset in a trade where the other team is really just interested in, you know, salary. Whereas Batum, because he was making 13 or whatever his contract was, might have been harder to include. So, you know, again, we don't really know the rest of the league's perception of these different guys and whatnot. But in my mind, you know, Olshay can call him a rotation player all he wants, but this trade was made for Noah Vonleh, and it was made for added flexibility going into the free agency.
Yeah, you know, to be quite fair, I didn't watch a heck of a lot of Charlotte Hornets basketball last year, other than, you know, when the Blazers played them and a little bit here and there.
Right.
And I know things kind of went south there with Lance Stephenson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Kemba Walker, Al Jefferson weren't able to really carry the team on their backs all season. We know that Rich Cho's over there, so there's kind of a Blazer connection there. You know, so I didn't get to see a heck of a lot of Noah Vonleh. I think he might have played in 25 games this season, so You know, even hardcore Charlotte Hornets fans didn't get to see a heck of a lot of Noah Vonleh.
Right, for sure.
But what we do know about him is he's a 6'10" power forward, right?
Something like that. He's supposed to be really long, very strong, can move people down low, good rebounder. Supposedly has a pretty good face-up game from everything I'm reading. And the big question, and this was the question when he was going into the draft, is he didn't really shoot all that much at Indiana, but he was being billed as this stretch four, this guy who could shoot the ball from deep, face up, dribble past guys, all that kind of stuff. And he just didn't show any of it last year. And I read some reports that different scouts had very different opinions about his shooting stroke and how good it was. And, you know, basically my impression of, you know, like the little bit I've seen of him and what I've read is that if he can hit the three, he could be a very interesting player. If he can't, he's going to just be pretty average, if that. So, I mean, it's definitely a risky move. I think he shot just pretty bad from everywhere in his rookie season. But he's what, like 19?
Yeah, so, 19 and a half.
To me, I'm not – I actually don't think – you know, I'm sure we're going to get into this, but I don't think the book is – or the horses left the barn, or whatever phrase you want to use about Aldridge in terms of his decision. But it was definitely, definitely a long-term thing. This wasn't a get better next year move at all.
Right. Obviously, you know, the Blazers organization is pretty high on Noah Vonleh. And they appreciate his upside and they think that eventually he could fit in to the Blazers rotation there as a key contributor, it would seem, if you're willing to trade away a guy like Batum, all things considered.
Sure.
And, you know, the interesting thing about that is that he plays the same exact position as LaMarcus Aldridge.
Yeah. He's so young and he's so far away from being good, though. I think they were really just... My best guess, and again, all this is speculation and whatnot, but that they wanted to get more flexible because they need to impress Aldridge with what they do in free agency. Mm-hmm. And he was the best player available in terms of what they could get for him in a trade. So the whole position thing doesn't really bother me that much. The Plumlee trade, on the other hand, I don't know if everybody's going to want to hear this, but I think it puts Myers Leonard in play to being traded.
Are you kidding? Really?
Yeah.
let's kind of, because we can kind of just gloss over the Aldridge stuff. It is what it is. It's not particularly interesting. It's just kind of national media, local media, putting out unnamed sources, basically, and then the Blazers organization kind of volleying the media and the Blazers organization kind of volleying back and forth over what LaMarcus is going to do. It's not that interesting, and there's nothing we can really garner from that.
The only thing I wanted to point out was what I thought was one of the most interesting quotes from Neil O'Shea's press conference is, you know, he's addressing the LaMarcus Aldridge situation, and, you know, he's talking about he spoke with LaMarcus, and he asked LaMarcus, how would you like me to address these rumors from Stein and other people? And then Aldridge said, according to O'Shea, quote, "just say it's not true. You and I know where we are right now." And I think just it's not most of the press, but to me that second statement is the most interesting, in that "you and I know where we are right now" implies that, you know, they kind of have a sense of what each other want and what they're expecting. Mm-hmm. But to me it's very, very possible that, you know, where they are right now is that LaMarcus is perhaps interested in staying, but needs to feel like the team is a lot better than the one that he had last year. And again, all of that's totally speculation.
Right.
But, you know, that's one way that's kind of the moves and what kind of all the different sides are saying makes sense, at least to me, is if Aldridge told the team, you know, if it's the same team, I don't think I want to come back. But then obviously Neil O'Shea has an opportunity to improve the team before Aldridge makes that final decision. So to me, you know, again, just per speculation, reading tea leaves, all that, you know, bogus stuff that we do,
right,
real chips to fall, that's to me the only thing that makes everything kind of fit together in a way that makes any sort of sense.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's important that we don't speak in absolutes in regards to this situation, because it's completely open-ended. We don't know if he's going to stay. We don't know if he's going to leave.
Right.
We know that he hasn't, you know, according to the organization, that he hasn't informed the team that he's going to leave. That's all we know. Dave had some great articles on Blazers Edge that goes through this in a lot deeper detail. You can find that on the main page of Blazers Edge. We've broken down quite a bit of the coverage of the team the last 48 right. hours. So if you want to read, you know, more into the specifics of the situation between, you know, what's going on with the media and the organization and LaMarcus, check out Blazers Edge. You can find all that kind of consolidated in one place. But I think
for sure
more interesting than that, the kind of conjecture about what's going on with LaMarcus right now, as you mentioned, we can talk about this, is that Mason Plumlee deal. So what happened there was the Blazers draft Hollis Jefferson at number 23, mm-hmm. Basically flip him to the Nets for Mason Plumlee, along with right. Steve Blake, and bringing back Pat Connaughton. So Connaughton, is that someone that you see, we can kind of talk about him real quick, someone who could be a contributor next year? Do you think he is, even a lock to make the roster?
Lock is probably too strong, but I think he's got a good shot. I didn't see him play much, but you know, from everything that's said, I mean, he's a 4-year guy, so you know he's going to come in more ready than most people. He guarded power forwards in college, so he definitely fits into the whole positionless basketball that the whole league is kind of enamored with since, you know, Golden State. He can really shoot. I think a lot of the draft combine stuff in terms of his athleticism is a little overblown, but, you know, at least he's not a total stiff. So, he's definitely going to have to prove he can cut it on the defensive end, just like every rookie. But in terms of NBA-ready players, a guy who can already really, really stroke it, and a guy who's had experience defending multiple positions, especially when the team looks so thin on the wing right now, I think he's got a good shot at making the team. And the nice thing is, you know, second round pick, he doesn't really affect the cap sheet. So,
from my understanding, and I kind of garnered this a little bit from reading Blazers Edge the last couple of days, Connaughton is kind of a good end-to-end guy, not so much left to right. And in terms of his defense, he does struggle a bit, athletic guy, and has a great outside shot. You got to like the potential there. I'm always a fan of 4-year guys. I shouldn't say always, but I generally appreciate when a team drafts a 4-year guy. And maybe that's just a personal thing, but I think it's kind of cool. A guy who can maybe, you know, come in and knows the ropes a little more than a rookie, your typical rookie. So I think that's kind of neat. I think definitely, you know, with the open-ended nature of the roster right now, I'd like to see what he can do in summer league with the Blazers, and then we can kind of gauge it a little more from there. We can see, you know, how he fits with players who are of similar skill level,
right?
And then kind of judge it based on that. I know summer league is not, it's almost like watching D League, but you know, we got to see him in action before we really start talking about his impact on the rotation, if any. Mason Plumlee, though, that's a guy who is he's going to be going into his third year. He's a fairly young guy. He's on his rookie deal, so he's going to be affordable for the next rookie deals are options on the third and fourth year.
He's got 2 years left,
so he'll be had. I'm sure they'll exercise that option at the price that they're getting at. It's like $1.5 million or $2 million.
Yeah, so they have him for $1.5 million next year and like $2 million the year after, or something like that.
So that's an absolute no-brainer.
For sure.
And we saw the production when Brooke Lopez of the Nets was hurt off and on last season.
Yep.
Plumlee actually kind of slid into that starting center role. He's 6'10", but he plays center.
Right.
And if you're watching the NBA All-Star break and you saw him participate in the dunk contest in a rather lackluster fashion there. At any rate, though, I think it goes to show the athleticism of this guy, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the one thing that I think a lot of people have in very fairly kind of criticized the team for, especially after this last year, was kind of the lack of versatility, especially on the defensive end, mm-hmm. and how, you know, I think the Blazers made huge progress over the last 2 years, kind of finding a defensive identity, developing it well, doing it well, becoming, at the very, very least, a well above average defensive team, you know?
Right.
So that should certainly be lauded. But the one thing is that, you know, they had one way that they played, and they could only play that one way. And, you know, the thing about Golden State that if you, you know, to me, even almost maybe more impressive than, you know, how much success they had with small ball is that they, you know, pretty much every playoff series had so much flexibility to do so many different things and make so many different adjustments, that, you know, each team, you know, after the Pelicans, which was kind of just, you know, lopsided, you know, each opponent maybe had a little bit of success the first couple games, but had so much talent, so much flexibility that they were able to figure it out. So Mason Plumlee is definitely a different type of center than Robin Lopez.
Rest in peace, Robin Williams.
Right. You know, is kind of in that Tyson Chandler mold of, you know, very athletic, can jump, coordinated, catch the ball in the air, finish lob dunks, can roll hard, is pretty mobile, maybe a little bit undersized, but, you know, that's kind of a, he's still 6'10 and strong. So, yeah, I mean, I like him. It's kind of interesting that, you know, they traded Rondae Hollis-Jefferson for him because he, probably maybe more than anybody in the draft, was kind of the, you know, the ideal Golden State type player who's, you know, can guard 1 through 5, is crazy long, crazy good defender, you know, all that stuff. So, you know, in some ways it's a little upsetting to lose a guy like that because of his potential to play a way that the Blazers never have. But they really traded him for a guy who at a different position is kind of more in line with what the rest of the league is doing. And, is also kind of a different way of playing what the Blazers had last year.
Yeah, I really do actually like Plumlee. I remember, you know, when the Nets would play the Blazers and I was getting, you know, the previews together and kind of looking at some of the stats and what Plumlee was able to do on the court when he was starting in place of Lopez and then coming right off the bench. You basically have an athletic energy guy,
right,
who works hard on the boards, who has great touch around the rim. And as you mentioned, he could finish well, on the roll, in the pick and roll. And that's something, you know, from the front court, the Blazers, that's going to be a really big boon to the Blazers front court, is the ability for Damian Lillard to kind of pair himself in the pick and roll with somebody who can cut hard to the rim and finish.
Right. It's going to be really hard to guard a Lillard Plumlee pick and roll just because of those two things and his ability to shoot off the dribble. I think the other thing that I would say is, and again, this might be confirmation bias, but to me, the Plumlee trade is exactly what you would expect from a team that is trying to make a big splash in free agency to impress Aldridge, but not sure he's going to re-sign. Because if you're in that situation, you want to get more flexibility, you want to get more cap space so you can get that guy that's going to impress Aldridge. You also want to get a guy who's going to help you next year. But you also want that guy to be young just in case he leaves, just in case Aldridge leaves. So, you know, Plumlee definitely checks all those boxes where he can help next year. He gave him a little bit more cap room. And then, you know, if Aldridge leaves, he's a great guy on a great contract in that scenario as well.
Exactly. That's what I was going to mention. You got to love that contract. I mean, when the salary cap goes up next offseason and then again the next offseason, that thing is going to be minuscule.
Right.
It's going to be very, very small potatoes. So you got to love that. You know, even if LaMarcus doesn't come back, hypothetically speaking, and you kind of alluded to this earlier, looking at the Blazers front court of guys who are there for sure right now, you're going to have Vonleh, you're going to have Mason Plumlee, and then you have Myers Leonard.
Yeah.
And so, and that's not even mentioning Aldridge or Robin Lopez coming back. And,
right,
and then you have Chris Kaman. You know, we're not entirely sure what the Blazers are going to do with his option on his contract, or I'm sorry, his non-guaranteed money next season. Right. So, but as far as we can tell, that's the rotation that's coming back.
Yeah, I don't. Based on the two moves, I would be floored if they don't waive him.
Right, and just kind of absorb that $1.5 million that he'd be guaranteed. Yeah. I think that would be kind of a wash considering the talent that was brought in and the price that they were brought in for. So, you know, but we still have those three young guys that are kind of in the front court. And you alluded earlier that this may signify that Leonard may be on the table.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's on the trade block or anything like that. But, you know, to me, and again, it's kind of assuming that my read on the situation is the right one, but the Blazers are in press Aldridge mode, right? And so if the right deal comes along where they can move Myers Leonard as part of a trade to get a pretty established player, and if you look at some of the numbers of what the team's cap space is going to be, depending on, you know, if the team keeps Wesley or not, and, you know, in my opinion, and this again might be a bias because Wesley's my favorite player and I would hate to see him go, but
that makes two of us.
Yeah, I think Aldridge, from everything I've read and like his interviews and everything, you know, definitely respects Matthews as a player, and I would be shocked if losing Matthews would be any sort of part of a pitch to Aldridge. So assuming he's around, the Blazers aren't going to quite be able to get to max level money, which then means if they want to try to get a guy that's really going to impress Aldridge, they're going to have to shed some salary. And, you know, they obviously aren't moving Damian. In terms of other guys that make enough money to really matter at all and would be attractive to another team, you know, Leonard is kind of the guy. And to me, Mason Plumlee at least makes that something that you could consider and still have, you know, a really dynamic young backup center. And, you know, Plumlee played a little bit alongside Brook Lopez. So, I mean, there's some of that power, like 4.5 that Myers Leonard calls himself with Plumlee as well. So, I mean, I'm not saying I think he'll be moved. I'm just saying,
right,
I would have said close to zero chance that Leonard is traded. But now that Plumlee's here, I think, you know, and now that all the signals are pointing to the Blazers trying to make a really big splash in the free agency, you know, it wouldn't surprise me now.
Right. I suppose Leonard could be that piece that you could dangle to where we saw his production in the playoffs.
Right.
You know, presumably teams don't think that he's leveled off there, right?
For sure.
That he's I believe 22 years old. He's still, you know, going into his fourth season. So, you know, there's still some potential there, and he kind of showed, you know, where he's at. And so he's also an affordable player on a rookie contract.
For sure.
So that signifies that he is making enough money that you could potentially bring something of consequence back for him, but also that he's affordable enough that he would be attractive to another team. It just kind of...
Right.
So what you're saying is kind of, you know, you're not expecting him to be traded necessarily, but, you know, he is probably the most tantalizing trade piece that Neil O'Shea could dangle out there, right?
And in terms, I mean, I haven't really checked these numbers, and Blazers fans since 1970 or a bunch of other people may have more specific numbers, but my back of the envelope calculations are that, you know, if they waive Kamen and everybody else, you know, they can get somewhere in the range like $14.5 million in cap room. And if they're going after, you know, somebody really like a max guy, they're going to need an extra, what would it be? You know, $4 million.
Yeah, roughly. I think 18.5 or so.
Yeah. So, you know, Myers Leonard is going to be kind of one of those guys that gets them closer to that. And, you know, a team that's going to lose a max guy would love to get Myers Leonard back. I would be shocked if any team, you know, if their max guy said, I don't want to play for you next year, that, you know, that team wouldn't jump at the opportunity to at least get a player like Leonard back. So, you know, if going after a max guy is what the Blazers are doing, I think that absolutely, and I think all the signs point to that, I think that absolutely puts, you know, Myers Leonard at least in play, at least more so than he was before all these moves.
If I had told you that Myers Leonard would likely be the Blazers' most attractive trade piece, you know, let's just say last September, what may you have said to me?
Oh, man, I don't even know.
You're crazy is what I would have said to somebody.
He's been a great lesson. And I think it's a really good one because, you know, in so many ways, we treat these people not necessarily as people. And, you know, even just beyond just, you know, a team perspective, just remembering that that kind of potential is there and that, you know, so much of all these guys' futures and who they are as people and players is undetermined, you know. No, I will certainly be a lot more generous in the future.
Definitely. I mean, I don't think we wrote him off, but
oh, I did.
Oh, you had written Leonard.
I absolutely had.
On the defensive end, I had for sure.
He totally proved me wrong.
Yeah,
I hope he's with the team next year. I'm absolutely thrilled to see him play next year.
I went from, you know, barely glossing over him in game previews in 2013 and 14. You know, to he was the main kind of protagonist in some of the previews in the playoffs against the Memphis Grizzlies. So, his trajectory has been nothing but upward since last offseason. Yeah. I'd like to see him stick around. We'll see what happens with that. Let's kind of put a bow on this conversation a bit and talk about, you know, what all this movement means in the aggregate for the Blazers as far as we can tell right now. Right. What can we kind of take away from this, you know, June 29th?
Yeah. Well, I think the first thing is that either the front office didn't think the team was close, or, and I think the second one is more likely, that they recognized that bringing the team back wasn't going to convince Aldridge to stay, and without Aldridge, the rest of the team didn't make sense. And this is something I think we've been talking about for a while, that you know, he really is the keystone of the team, and once, if he's gone, you really got to kind of rethink everybody. So you definitely got to give him credit not being scared to recognize how important Aldridge is. And so to me, you look at the moves, you look at the cap sheet, all that stuff, and the Blazers really have kind of one big chunk of cap room. You know, I think I said it was like 14.5 based on my back of the envelope rough calculations. Right. Then they've got a number of trade pieces. I think Gerald Henderson could be on the move. I mean, Noah Vonleh, I think you can definitely trade him. I think he has some value. I don't think the team's attached to him. You know, Myers Leonard as well. And then even, you know, Mason Plumlee could be moved. So, I mean, I really like CJ McCollum, and I think it's pretty unlikely the team moves him. But, you know, any of these guys, if you're talking about, you know, not only turning them into somebody who makes, you know, $15 million, you know, $10 million, something like that, you're not only going to get a guy like that, but you're also going to convince Aldridge to stay. I mean, like, anybody, anything is possible on that trade market. And I mean, I think if you do the, you know, Gerald Henderson, Noah Vonleh, put those two contracts together, you can bring back like $13 million or something. Mm-hmm. So that could certainly be a good player.
There's definitely a lot there.
Yeah. So to me, you know, with the number of holes on the roster, with what Olshay's been saying, all those types of things, I think the only way this doesn't turn into a rebuild where Aldridge leaves and the team kind of probably makes some stabs at some big name free agents, but I mean, I doubt they'll really want to come. The only way that, you know, the team can kind of put something together to impress Aldridge is two big moves for two big guys. Right. And you know, it's always uncertain with free agency, but you know, particularly, you know, those guys that you could think that would make enough of a difference to kind of keep Aldridge here, you know, definitely DeAndre Jordan. I think the Blazers are close enough in terms of cap room where they could put together a sign and trade or move some other stuff around. But you know, the chances of him leaving are pretty small. I think they definitely made enough room to go after Tyson Chandler. He could definitely be one of those guys. Again, And I'm assuming the team is going to try to keep Wesley just because of his relationship with Aldridge, all that kind of stuff. Maybe that's wrong, but you know, that leaves kind of trying to put together a trade for a small forward after you sign a center, or maybe the other way around. And you're looking at guys like, you know, Tobias Harris or Luol Deng or, you know, somebody in that kind of category.
That's enticing a little bit there.
Yeah, I mean, there are reports that they don't want to match, you know, a max offer, and Tobias wants one. You could get pretty close to a max number for Harris since he's only been in the league 6 or 4 years. So he's got that lower percentage max. You know, so, I mean, it's certainly, O'Shea has some stuff where, you know, there's some potential. You can put together some, you know, gets Tobias and Chandler to fill out the starting lineup. You get Tobias as a stretch four. You can play Aldridge at the five, Tobias at the four, you know, and then put the rest of the team together. You'd have a lot more roster flexibility. You'd be able to keep Myers and Plumlee. Like, those kind of scenarios are pretty intriguing, but it's just, you know, in many ways so risky. And I think the thing that we can definitely say with a lot of confidence is that the moves of the last 3 days or whatever have just opened up the Blazers to so much more risk and uncertainty than there was. And we'll really just have to see how it plays out. It's kind of, to me, it's been kind of the theme of Olshay's tenure here, is that given the constraints, you can really understand the logic and kind of defend all of the moves that he's made. But at the same time, you know, given those constraints, none of those moves have really been a difference maker yet. So it kind of depends on how you want to judge a GM based on kind of what's reasonable to be done versus, you know, what was the ultimate result of all those moves. And again, you know, we're not going to see that for a while, but yeah, it's going to be a crazy July.
Well, you know, as they say, you got to risk it for the biscuit. So, I mean, you gotta put yourself out there. If this is what the Blazers thought they needed to do to get to the next level, at right. some point, you have to be willing to jump into the deep end and take a bit of a risk. Sure. And that's obviously what they're doing. You know, my immediate visceral reaction to it was kind of flashes of Bob Whitsitt, you know, kind of the trade for trade's sake. When the Batum right. news came out, I was like, oh my God, Henderson and Vonleh, are you kidding me? And then as, you know, the draft news kind of trickled down, it was, you know, I kind of had a knee-jerk reaction of frustration, because I've been kind of banging the drum of continuity for the last right. year and a half, essentially. And so, you know, emotionally, I was like, oh man, that kind of hurt. Like, dang, I thought this was the plan that was going to be set in motion. I'd like to see
sure.
Terry Stotts in his fourth year with all these starters. But, you know, if you step back from it and kind of look at it in the aggregate, it absolutely makes sense. And everything that you pointed out in terms of flexibility, and I think it goes both ways, whether or not LaMarcus stays, you know.
Oh, for sure.
Because if he stays, they have the cap room and they have the combination of young talent and veteran talent, Damian Lillard,
sure.
to keep around LaMarcus and be competitive in the short term. If LaMarcus decides to leave, again, you have yeah. all these affordable contracts and, you know, cheap, productive young guys who could either be used in trades, or you could allow them totally. To develop along with the rest of the core
yeah.
team. So
I mean, be convince Aldridge to stay. There's just like, there's no other potential. I mean, he's just so good, right? And I think you can definitely defend, you know, assuming Aldridge wasn't satisfied with the team last year, which I think is pretty obvious at this point. You know, you can defend all of the moves of the past 3 days on making it more likely that plan A will work. And then, you know, plan B is obviously, you know, all your contingency plans. And I think you can also defend them on that level in terms of making plan B also more appealing and more fleshed out, and, you know, with more potential and more young guys and all that stuff. So, you know, again, it's moves make sense from, you know, the little bit we know. But at the same time, the moves kind of suck and
yeah.
imply, you know, a lot of uncertainty about the team. And, you know, the team could be really bad next year, which is a tough pill to swallow. Yikes. After such, you know, kind of a really fun run, especially with a team that was so much fun. I mean, this team was so much fun to root for. Just you mentioned that emotional level, like regardless of assets and, you know, flipping players and, you know, who's going to win. I mean, just, I think we were all really blessed with a team that was so good, so much fun to watch, and had so many awesome personalities on it. And so it's sad that team's over.
No, I don't disagree at all, but it's hard to not look at what's going down as just kind of smart, shrewd asset management. And so from that perspective, I definitely am more appreciative, taking a step back, looking at what Neil O'Shea's done.
Yep.
And, you know, in a couple weeks, July 1st, that's going to fall next week. So teams will be able to negotiate. We'll start getting kind of things will be coming out in the waiver wire that teams have agreed to free agent contracts and sign in trades. So we'll start getting a better picture, a more clear picture of what's going down with the Blazers July 1st, July 9th. The Blazers will be able to actually sign guys. Other teams will be able to sign. So by then, we'll have more of an idea of what the skeleton of this roster is going to look like, aside from Damian and some of the young guys that were just brought in, and McCollum. And we could talk about that in a few weeks, because I think it's going to be interesting to talk about how this offense could potentially change or stay going the same direction and you know, perhaps evolve a little bit. So, you know, we'll get you back on, you know, Willie, and, you know, sometime in July, and we'll start breaking down maybe around Summer League, and we'll start talking about some of these young guys a little more.
Sounds good. Looking forward to it.
All right, man. Well, I appreciate you coming on a Friday night. I thought we were going to be talking just draft, but we ended up sucking into talking about, you know, three or four trades. So thanks for coming by, Willie. We'll get you on pretty soon, man.
Always a pleasure.
And that's a wrap on episode 50 of the Blazers Edge podcast. I'd like to thank you very much for listening, and I'd also like to thank Blazers Edge contributor Willie Reddy for joining the show. Make sure and check back early next week to hear Phil Nasons and Dave Deckard. I'm Chris Lucian. I'll be back for the weekend.